Hey guys, welcome back to another podcast. Welcome back to Timeline, hosted by Charlie Firth and myself, Tim Chung. I hope you guys really enjoyed our previous podcast where we talked about my career and how I got to where I am right now and a brief overview. And today we have Charlie's Timeline.
It's my turn. I'm up. I'm on stage.
Are you excited?
I'm not really a big person to talk about myself.
You love talking about yourself.
I hate talking about myself. I'm excited to go through things and to give people a little understanding of where I've kind of come from and the background that I have and what I kind of did, because I think it's a little, let's just say, it's probably not the typical career of a even like me saying I'm creative, like, is strange to me. But I wouldn't say that my timeline or my journey is like the route that people would choose to go. So yeah, I don't know. I'm excited. Let's see what happens.
No, it's gonna be really good. So last time we were talking all about me, and when we started I gave a brief overview of who I am. So if you've joined and you have no idea who both of us are, obviously you can check us both out on Instagram and our social medias. But for those that do not know who you are, or actually maybe they do know who you are, do you want to give a quick brief introduction?
Absolutely. My name is Charlie Firth and I am 20. Oh, I'm not 28 anymore. I'm 29. Just turned 29.
Yeah. As I said, getting old.
Yeah, getting old. A 90s baby. So yeah, I am a digital producer in London. I work for a company called Dream Tech and I'm based at another company, which I've chosen not to say. If you want to Google where I work, you're more than welcome to. But I work for Dream Tech at another company and I've been doing that for a year now. And then prior to that, I was at the BBC Digital Studios. And prior to that, I was at the YouTube space in London. And prior to that, I was actually based full time at Dream Tech because they are a production company. And I kind of started off roughly at Dream Tech in 2012. But yeah, I'd say I'm a digital producer currently, / just producer, whatever you want to say. But digital is more where I am rooted in right now.
Yeah. So did you always want to be a producer, or how did that come around?
Mm.
What was it like back early days with little Charlie?
Boy. That's actually super young. Let's not start there. I was born in 1991. This is going to be a 3-hour podcast, everybody. Sit tight.
2 hours later.
we're recording this at midnight. This is our lives right now.
You just got the giggles. I don't know why.
I'm going to go to bed at 3 a.m. So I am originally from Sussex, a small town in Sussex. And I have lived in the same house. My parents have never moved. I lived in the same house my entire life until I went to university. But yeah, I went to a technology college and GCSEs was... I was really good at PE, loved PE, really good at PE.
What sport? Any PE?
I was on the netball team. Anything, rounders, sports, long distance, swimming. I used to swim, like, that was my thing. I was a swimmer. I kind of got into like up to about county level until I went to uni and then discovered drinking. That's a story for another day. But yeah. I kind of really liked PE and that lot and did sociology and English and history. And then at A-level, I took, as we kind of mentioned in your one, you did chemistry, I did biology, and I sucked. I got a U. I remember doing coursework and it was all about like, I can't remember the exact thing that we had to write about, but it was basically like saying why science was so great and why... I think it was like genetic engineering was so good. And I disagreed with the teacher and said, no, this is terrible. And basically I didn't do very well. And I also took history, English lit, and law, and decided to drop biology and, yeah, kind of progress with the other three, and got all right grades in the end. I got AAB, and when I was kind of picking my university choices, it was out of, I had five in the end, because a lot of my friends were going to like Portsmouth and Brighton because they were close to where I lived. But in my head, I was like, no, this is now time to flee the nest and kind of get away from the small town that I kind of grew up in. So I looked at places like York, Sheffield, Loughborough was on my list. And like Loughborough was like the place that I wanted to go ever since I was like 11, 12. I was like, I really wanted to do sports science and kind of go down that route. So I, in another parallel world, maybe I would have been a sports person in some way, shape or form. But I ended up going to Loughborough, and my dad was like kind enough to take me, you know, when you have like university open days.
Yeah. And to put in context, how far is Loughborough from your house, and how far are these other universities?
York is about probably 5 hours on the train. Loughborough is probably about 3-4 hours drive.
And then the closer universities, how far are they?
I think Loughborough was the closest. It was like Sheffield was miles away, and then Exeter, which is, well, where I ended up going, because I did apply for like main Exeter Uni for the really clever people. Mm. But I didn't go to that one in the end. I went to another campus in Falmouth, which is in Cornwall, which takes about 7 hours to drive door to door, 7.5 hours with a stop.
Wow.
So it wasn't like I could pop back at the weekends. Mm. Let's put it that way. And yeah, I kind of got through school. I wouldn't say it was like the best time of my life. If any of my friends are listening, then they're the friends that I still talk to today, and I love them to pieces. And yeah, very thankful for having them in my life. But I kind of went to uni with a bit of an outlook to become, I guess, the next.
What did you study at uni?
English and history. Yeah, English and history, which I'm sure my mum won't actually listen to this podcast, but I remember picking...
Never knew.
Hi, mum. Hi, dad. I remember when I was picking choices for what I wanted to study, I was like, oh, I'd love to do photography. I'd love to do media. Because I was getting into it, and I didn't actually pick media at A level, but my best friend at the time was doing it. And I remember we edited together this is really funny. We edited together, like, I don't know if you had a final assembly in your school, and we edited an 18 minute long video. Wow. for this final assembly. Like, it went on and on. Like, looking back now, it was a disaster. It just went like on and on and on. And like one song would play, like Green Day's Time of Your Life. And then like another song about goodbye would play. And then, you know.
What was on the screen? Photos?
Photos of people. Like, it was just an 18 minute collage.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it was so bad. But I remember like I was so into editing. Like, we'd stay after school and we'd edit these videos. And then I'd make videos with her at the weekends, and we just like, it was stupid, you know, kid stuff, like dressing up, like doing lip sync battles, all that. This was like YouTube had just come out then. So this must have been like, yeah, 2005, 2006, 2007, those times. And it was so much fun. And I just remember being like, oh, I love making videos. Like, this is so cool. But we ended up putting our videos on Bebo. Rather than YouTube.
Yes, Bebo. So
I could have been a YouTube star by now.
I wonder how many people listening to this know what Bebo is.
I think if you're under...
If you know what Bebo is, you're doing... I think you're doing well.
Yeah. Leave us a comment on a recent picture on Instagram if you know what Bebo is.
Give me some love on Bebo.
Yeah. Do you remember you had to pick your top three friends? Or...
Yeah, I do.
Oh. Brutal.
But how did, so you said you went to uni, right? And you studied English and history.
Yes. I ended up not picking a traditional media degree. My parents basically said to me, you know, look at BBC journalists, look at people who are doing top things in their industry, they studied more traditional things. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of media students would disagree with my parents' statement there. But at the same time, I have ended up in the media industry, so maybe they were right.
How did that work then? So did you graduate with English and history degree?
I graduated with a history degree. If I'm going to be very honest with you, I haven't actually thought about my actual degree for a very, very long time because I went to uni and then discovered just a completely new side to life. Like everything that I'd known growing up was flipped on its head. Like I was surrounding myself with people from all over the world. I was, you know, I had independence for the first time in my life. I got to go out whenever I wanted. I got to go clubbing whenever I wanted. I was mixing with a lot of different people, but I was very quiet the first 2 years of uni. And I think if anyone knows me from back when I was in school, like I was very quiet. I wasn't as like kind of loud and as outgoing as I am today. Like it's taken me a very long time to get comfortable with who I am. And I guess why are you laughing?
I don't know. There's loads of things I want to like, she's still quiet, guys.
Yeah. I wouldn't definitely not say I'm like the loudest person in the room. I kind of like being quiet. I like listening to people. I think it's more interesting to listen.
Talk so much stuff all the time.
So what was I saying? I forgot what I was saying, but
no, yeah. That's really good. But what I'm trying to, I don't know. It's hard to understand. So you graduated with history.
Mm-hmm.
Then
with the 2-2.
But then what was the thought process then of, was it while you were at uni, did you always think, right, I want to be a producer or?
Oh, no.
And then like, what did you do after uni essentially?
Yeah. So my last year, I was barely like getting through. I was having to write a dissertation as we all kind of had to. But I was a very lastminute.com because I don't really know what I wanted to do. I was kind of like, why am I spending my time writing about this when I could be doing something else? Or I don't think I utilized the time at university. And in hindsight, I would love to have gone back and do it all over again with the kind of head on my shoulders that I have now. But I would think I was still getting to know like who I am as a person. And my third year I was definitely not the best English and history student by far, but again, like you kind of said in your podcast, like it got me to like understand the essence of like waking up and doing this and handing things on time and, you know, paying bills. You've got a flat now. Like I lived on campus for the first year and then with my friends for the second and third years. So you just, you learn life skills, very valuable life skills. And in my third year, I was working at McDonald's at the time and...
Yes, McDonald's.
Yeah, Mackie D's. Yeah, so I was working for my second and third year, which is again, probably why I didn't really do so great because I was spending a lot of time with my colleagues there, if I'll be honest. Like we'd go out after work, like I'd work late shifts and I don't know. It's kind of like just putting in work, physical work there.
What was it like working at McDonald's?
At the time? I will be very honest with you. I really loved it.
Mm.
Like, I'm sure a lot of Mackie's workers in London would disagree. But like the McDonald's that I worked at was in Cornwall. It was quite a like slow pace. Let's say it wasn't too busy. The town that I went to uni in is like a beautiful seaside town. If anyone's been down to Falmouth, then you'll understand. It's like a really just nice, you know, there's a beach. It's very chillaxed. Type of course, like it's not city like this. It's very laid back, and I've just got to know all the Cornish.
Free food.
Yeah, free food.
That's what everyone wants to know.
Oh yeah, it's free. Well, actually, I this was like 10 years ago, so this might have changed. But yeah, I did get a bit porky at uni. I came out of porky. I was chubby Charlie. I went home.
Even though PE was your thing.
I didn't do any exercise during university at all. Put on a lot of weight. Came back home and. My parents were just like, what have you done? You've let yourself go.
Wow. I wish we could throw up a picture, but obviously...
Yeah.
Just visualize it in your head, guys.
But during my third year, I was also reaching out to do work experience. So I'd put the feelers out there to do... You know, I knew I wanted to go into, a media career, but I didn't really know what or how to do that, let's say. So I graduated, but I stayed at uni over the summer. This was 2012, so it was like the summer of the London Olympics. Kate and Wills got married. It was very much like there was this really like there were street parties. The UK was very lively in 2012. It was a really like exciting place to be, I think. It was just lots of people full of energy. It was a really good year. And I came back home. So I left university. We all dispersed. All my friends left, went back to their lives. And yeah, I was in WH Smith. So I just didn't have, you know, didn't have a job kind of lined up like you. I was, just a bit of a loss, I guess. I was living back with my parents again and was working pretty much full time at WH Smith.
Doing stacking shells.
Yeah,
behind
the counter. Like I used to get told off because I'd be like reading books because it was so boring. Mm. Obviously, I had to try and sell. You know, at WH Smith, they have like the yellow stickers where they're like, would you like some chocolate today?
If you don't know what WH Smith is, WH Smith is basically a stationery store, essentially.
Yeah.
In the UK.
Where you like buy books and...
Books, stationery, pens, pencils.
Bit of everything. There's one in like every town. It's one of those shops that's just always everywhere. But yeah, I was there for a bit. And then whilst I was there, I got a job at I don't know if I've ever told you this, at an upcycling company.
I've never heard of that. what do you mean?
So upcycling, if you haven't heard of that, is basically where you take, let's say you've got an old chair in your room that looks a bit tattered and a bit grubby. Upcycling is where you repaint it and give it a new lease of life.
Oh, is that where you get your repainting thing from? It makes so much sense now. Yeah. Charlie likes to...
Repurpose
stuff.
Let's say.
But she's not very good at it. No offense. It's the first time I've said it.
Let's just say my designing skills aren't on par. But yeah, that was a company called Morbi. And I was there not for free. I believe they paid my train expense because I had to come up to London from my town. So it was about a £16 train fare that they paid for me. And I went to the Google. You know the Google, the Google Lab in Old Street?
The offices.
Yeah, where a lot of freelancers go and you can basically, I don't know if it's free or basically you have to apply to Google to work there.
Yeah, it's free for some people, but it's like hot desking, so you have to.
Yeah, it's a hot desking space, basically. So you go there with your laptop.
You can pay as well for offices.
Yeah. And then there's events going on. It's very good for networking if you're just starting out, you're a startup company. It's a great little space. And so that kind of opened up my eyes a little bit to, you know, I was getting to come into London every now and then. Like, luckily, I'm only a train ride from London anyway. So I'd been up with my parents a lot of times before. And it was kind of the obvious place, let's say, for me to get work. I knew I never wanted to stay in my hometown for long. I was always like, I was pretty much just blitzing like job hunts and trying to find like what I wanted to do because I didn't really know what I wanted to do, right? I think this is the problem with a lot of people. Unless I respect people so much, if they're at the age of 16, they're like, yeah, I want to be a doctor. Or like, yeah, I want to be a fireman. I want to be, you know, a scientist. I'm like, that is amazing. Like, good for you if you know what you want to do. But I had absolutely no idea. And yeah, basically like was working at this upcycling company. I'd done some work experience at 4Music and I'd done some work experience at Virgin Media Pioneers, which was you had to apply to get onto this program. And I did a video application because I was like, I don't want to do just a typical written application. I want to do a video application because it's different. And they saw that and I got onto this program and they were like, yeah, you only got this because you were the only one who did a video application.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, cool. And then the people I met there, there's one girl who I still speak to called Arthur. And she was like, she's doing really cool stuff now. But from there, I met these people. We started mingling a bit. I did some work experience at Media Trust. You know what Media Trust is? A lot of people do work experience and free work there. They're a great company. And then basically I got an interview at a company called DreamTech. And I think I'd been at WH Smith for just coming up to about a year now. And this was 2013 now. And yeah, I I was making YouTube videos in the background to all of this because I think
we would all love to see them YouTube videos on that Virgin application at some point in your life.
Maybe someday.
Do you actually still have the application video?
Yeah. I run into the sea in it. It's quite dramatic.
I want to see that tomorrow.
Quite dramatic. Yeah. So I'd been making YouTube videos, really just stupid, silly ones, but basically the CEO of DreamTech, I had my interview and then Joe, the guy who interviewed me, was like, I'm just going to get Garrett in. And then Garrett, the CEO, came over, had a chat with me. He was like, just a sec, I'm just going to get Vicky to come over. And then Vicky, the other director, came over. And I was like, you know, someone who's never really been in a company like this. You know, I'd only worked at a couple of companies up until then, nothing crazy, just enough to, I guess, dip my toe in the world of the entertainment industry. And then all these people are coming over and I'm like, ooh, trying to make a good impression. You know, I was wearing like a shirt, like just trying to say something of essence and of importance to make it seem like if they hired me, I'd be a good hire. But I kind of left that interview. I remember calling my dad just being like, yeah, I think it went well, but you know, I don't really know. Let's see what happens. And I went home and then I always, after every job interview I've ever done in my life, because my parents told me this, like I always emailed back the person to be like, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate, you know, you meeting me. Thank you. If I'm not the right candidate, best of luck type of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think, I can't remember how long went past, to be honest, but I basically got a job there and they hired me. And yeah, it was absolutely nuts. I was still living with my parents. I was commuting up to Liverpool Street every day, getting in at London Bridge, walking from London Bridge to Liverpool Street, which is about a 20-minute walk. And from there, that thus begun my career, I guess.
What did you do when you started there? What was your title?
I think my official title was something like production coordinator. It was very much like a runner, entry-based intern type of role. And there was another girl there at the time. I'm not going to name names, but she was the producer there.
Right.
And I started and then I was getting more, I was like staying late, like every day. I'd always just try to be one of the last in the office to like, I think when you start working within a company in an office, this was a relatively small office as well. It's not like what you think of when you think of office-based cubicles and working. Like this was a very like open space, dynamic East London office, right? And I can't remember too much back in the day, but there was within DreamTech, there was another...
Back in the day, as if you were so old.
Back in the day. It does seem like ages ago, though. This is the thing. It's
back in the day when I was younger.
They had a photographic agency, right? Called Republic. And I was within the heart of Republic. That was my thing. It was me, Joe, who interviewed me, and this other lady. And then there was another production company sat called Lemonade. And they were like another photographic agency. And then there was DreamTech, right? So there was three different companies within, but they all were under the umbrella of Republic, of DreamTech. And so, yeah, I was within Republic and I was basically getting involved in photography. That was like my entry into the world of photography. I was getting to book kit, like book digital operators, go on shoots, getting to know photographers, getting to know gear. And for about a year and a half, I was solely in charge of that. So basically they let this other producer go about a month after I joined.
Oh, really?
And I took...
And you were just a runner?
Yeah.
Well, what was your salary like then? Was it much different to what you were on at W. Smith?
My salary was probably about 14, 15K.
As a runner?
Yeah.
Was that similar to what you would have got at W. Smith?
At Smith's, I was probably on, I don't know, £6 an hour. Probably like, I can't do the maths, but yeah, it wasn't much when I first started. And then, yeah, pretty much just like working late, doing all that, all that crazy stuff, getting to know how everything works as you do at a company. And then I was really getting into the swing of things and getting going. And then we had a break in and someone took all the kit.
Wow.
Like we had, you know, Hasselblad.
Yeah.
So they had like,
of course,
really nice Hasselblad, like phase one, P45s, P65s, like really nice cameras, right? And
all gone.
Everything got nicked. And I remember it was really weird because I was so ingrained in this company, right? When the alarms went off.
Were you there?
No, but they called my phone because I was connected. I was basically like the office bitch, right?
Right.
I did everything for that office, everything. And when the alarm went off, it was my number that it called, but I missed it because it was like 3 a.m, right? Mm. So I was asleep. And then I woke up in the morning, went to work, and it was just chaos. And I just remember crying because I was like, this is my life. This is my world that's now been taken from me. Like, what am I supposed to do? Do I have a job here anymore? But by that time...
How old were you then?
23, maybe. Okay, still quite 22, young. 23. Yeah. But yeah, I was kind of gutted. But from that, I think DreamTech really bounced back and I was getting more involved in like live streaming. So back then, Google Hangouts was a really big thing. So DreamTech got a lot of gigs through Google and doing live streams. So I was getting to go on different live streams. We did stuff with like The Script. We did, oh boy. It was like loads. You know, there was a bullying campaign that was at Buckingham Palace once, and we got in to go to Buckingham Palace and like meet the royal family and all that. Like they were really cool opportunities coming from this. Like I got to go abroad with my colleague called Adrian. We got to go to Amsterdam. We got to go to Switzerland. Yeah, it was a really fun time, and it was just a lot of work. I had no real other responsibilities, so for me, I was like, I'm just going to plow everything into work. I'm just going to graft, work hard. You know, I was on like, I think by then I was about 18, 19K. And so
living at home, right?
No. So, well, I made the choice, I think, to work and commute from my home in Sussex for about 2 years. And then I moved up to London with my friend Matt because he'd got a job at Monster. Shout out, Matt, if you're listening. And he's still at Monster doing awesome design things.
That's cool.
Yeah, so he'd got a job roughly the same time as me, and he'd been commuting in, and we were like, it's time, like let's do this, like let's find a place. So we moved into somewhere in Shepherd's Bush, not far from here actually.
Shebu, for any London people listening.
Shebu, yeah, near Westfield. So we were down, yeah, we were down there, moved in there, and I was on about 19K, so having to pay for a flat.
How much was your rent back then?
Rent was a 725.
Okay, average for London.
Yeah, plus 725 plus bills. So it's about £900 going out each month, which basically, if you want to do the math, left me with £200 a month.
Whoa.
So I don't know if I've told you this story before. I got a Boris bike key, which you pay £90 for. Back then it was £90 for the year. You get a Boris bike key and you basically activate it. You put your key in, get a bike, you get it for half an hour for free. So I would go to my nearest Boris bike station in Shepherd's Bush and then cycle to Green Park, dock it at Green Park. Then you have to wait 5 minutes because you can't just take another one out. It's very painful.
I didn't know that. We have 5 minutes.
Yeah, you have to wait 5 minutes. So you wait. Then I took another bike out and had to pedal my ass off to get from Green Park to Liverpool Street within half an hour so I didn't get charged. And I did that every day for about a year.
Whoa, that's what, like a... 9K? 9K.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't Chubby Charlie by then. I'd like worked off my Mackie's weight. Bike. Yeah. So, yeah, I was doing that for ages. And I feel really bad for Matt because I had no money back then. I really didn't. Like, we kept busy. We definitely did stuff, but I barely had money for like a pint on a Friday night. And, you know, everyone who I work with, and this is the kind of thing that you were talking about. A lot of the guys at DreamTech were very good to me. They'd buy me lunch. They'd buy me a drink. It was very much a family environment. And I grew
so much. You were the kid.
Yeah.
The family.
I felt very much like that, you know, they're adopted their adopted daughter. Like they were just, they would be so nice to me. They'd take me out, you know, get a coffee. And yeah, it was really great. It was just, it was difficult because I just didn't have any outgoings really, just had nothing. So I basically just worked and worked away. And I reached a point where I was like, okay, I really need to like level up. And I was thinking about like, what's next? Should I leave Dream Tech? I really need to like make more money. And, you know, maybe, you know, I'd been working like long days. I was really, really putting the time and effort in. And then all of a sudden, so Dream Tech also work within the staffing industry. And they had built the first YouTube space in Tottenham Court Road. So if any of you are Londoners, you'll probably have seen there's a load of iconic, colourful buildings. And it's really funny, actually, because if you scroll back, I think I might have gotten rid of it off my Instagram. But one of the first pictures I'd ever posted on Instagram was the picture of the YouTube space, like years and years and years ago. It's like the colourful different buildings. I'll maybe show you later.
Wow.
But, and this was like maybe 4 years before I'd even started at YouTube. And I, yeah, the YouTube space contacted Dream Tech and were like, we need cover for someone because she's going on holiday for 2 weeks. Can you send someone in? And they sent me in and I did the work. I was ecstatic, like to say the least ecstatic, because my friend Tommy, who was at Dream Tech, he was an editor at Dream Tech, like roughly the same age as me, same interests as me. And I just joined Dream Tech and then Tommy left to go and be full-time at the YouTube space. And so I was like, oh, you know, Tommy's doing this really cool thing. Like I want to do what he's doing. And then this opportunity came up and I was like, oh my God, like it's only for 2 weeks. Like, let's just see how things go. Like, I don't expect to get anything from it. And yeah, it was nuts. It was amazing. It was everything I wanted. I knew I wanted to stay there. And
what
I remember,
did you do there?
I was just basically covering my boss, Louisa, at the time. She was like the production, I want to say she was production manager. Basically just the person who was organizing everything, right? And yeah, she went away and I basically just covered her for 2 weeks. And then she was coming back and I remember emailing the head of the YouTube space just being like, thank you so much for your time. Again, like I put together like a really nice, I think, email just being like, I've loved working here. Like if there's any opportunities, please consider me. Like I love this whole environment. And I obviously did something because then Dream Tech called me and were like, you're not coming back. You're staying there.
What did you love about it?
Oh, even like thinking like about the old space now just gets me like going.
You mentioned that you were just covering, but
yeah,
like what exactly
does
that mean?
So the YouTube space, if you haven't heard of it, it's a physical creator space where digital content creators on the platform can go and attend events, attend workshops and film. So there was at that particular YouTube space, there was three recording spaces. So there was a green room, there was a smaller studio called Hot Set, and there was a larger studio called Deep Focus. And it was like a long corridor and there was all these like iconic black and white images on one wall. And there was like bright yellow doors with what you call them, like the boat, the
steering wheels,
like, yeah, kind of, I don't really know how to describe it, just like super bright colors. There was Polaroid pictures of every single YouTuber that had come in. Like as soon as you walk in, it's like a wall covered with Polaroid pictures of like Charlie McDonnell, Jenna Marbles, Jax Gap, Ben Brown, like littered with, you know, John and Hank Green, iconic YouTubers. And just that, like back then at that stage in YouTube, there was so much money going around. There was like, everything was being done at such a quick pace because it was so new, because YouTube was blowing up and they had so much resource to give back to the community. And so there were events weekly. You know, there was something going on every
night.
You
just organized the events?
There was a particular... So the whole... There were three pillars within the space. It was like learn, connect, create. And there was someone dedicated to like learn, someone dedicated to connect, someone dedicated to create, which was the, you know, the actual... It just every single... Every pillar had a different person behind it who was running it. And then we were like the studio people. So we would greet the YouTubers when they came in. We would pretty much, like, I didn't have a desk. I think since that day, I've never really had a desk. Yeah, we'd just meet the YouTubers, give them the kit they needed to do, set up a green screen if they needed, set up the lights, anything that they needed help with, we were there. We needed to explain how a camera worked. I was giving workshops. I was, you know, hosting, different events, different things you need to do to be part of the space and just like hanging out with a lot of people.
Who did you watch on YouTube? Obviously, YouTube's been such a big part of your journey, which a lot of people, they don't know, they will know now. But who did you watch? Or did you watch a lot of people prior to going to this, working at the space?
Yeah. This is why it was such a dream job for me and why I was so like blessed and I felt so grateful to be there because I was obsessed with YouTube, absolutely obsessed with it. Throughout university, I was watching people like Grace Helbig. I loved like the American scene, like Troy Sivan, Connor Franta, Jax Gap, and like so many people back then. Yeah, like Charlie So Cool, like just, those types of people at the start. And then obviously you get to know more different people. Like the UK community was certainly growing, but it was very strong and tight knit back then. And a lot of people would come into the space that I used to watch and then actually getting to talk to them.
For example.
Oh, where do I start? Like,
just rhyme a few names. I feel like if people are interested in YouTube, they'll know these people.
Like Jazza. I'm trying to think, like, who used to come in back in the day? Stephen Bridges. Jack Howard. Hazel Hayes. Louise Pentland. I think Zoe and Alfie came in a few times. I need like a long list, but let's just say it was
Louis Cole, Ben Brown, Steve Booker.
Yeah. They didn't come in much.
Jack Harries.
Yeah, Jack Harries came in once to do a voiceover with Jamal Edwards. Like, I mean, it was a big community, right? And not everyone would be in, but you know, like Tom Scott. Like people like that who were really growing. And the channel Vsauce. So Vsauce was actually based at the space back then. And, you know, even just having chats with him, like at the coffee machine, was like just a bit surreal to me. and actually getting to like speak to these people and hear about what they were doing.
Were you nervous speaking to them? Like, how did you keep your cool?
Yeah, I definitely at the start. Because you obviously don't want to come across as like you're some crazy fangirl, but at the same time, like you are genuinely really, it was just like a matter of interest. I was just genuinely interested in what these creators were doing. I wanted to help as much as possible. And the more people that came in, I guess the more comfortable I began to feel with people and the more I got more ingrained with the community. And I think just doing that, I was there all the time. And I started to become that person who would, I'd say yes a lot. And I got into a lot of trouble for saying yes to a lot. And I'll perhaps move from the Tottenham Court Road YouTube because I was only there for a year. And then we moved to King's Cross. So we opened up a brand new space. It was huge. It was a ginormous new space. And if you're someone listening and you went to the opening party of that YouTube space, you would know, like, that was probably the most epic YouTube party I ever went to. It was, yeah. I remember.
So many big names as well.
There was like 600, 700 people there. Like Jenna Marbles was there. Like,
but also that weekend was the weekend of an event that happened.
Was it Sitsi? I think it was Sitsi that weekend too. And just it was a
summer in the city.
Yeah, it was a really hot weekend, and the queue to get in was absolutely mad. And yeah, that was a great night. But yeah, we moved to that space, and that just became my life for about 2.5 years. And the people that I met there and the things that we got up to there, like that first year of us being open, was so intense. It was event after event after event. We had new, like, we'd gone from a studio where it was myself and two other guys, plus Louisa, our manager, who pretty much predominantly ran the space. And this was a Monday to Saturday job, by the way. So I was working on Saturdays a lot. And yeah, we basically moved to the new YouTube space. And again, it was Monday to Saturday. And we were all on shifts. And there was about 11 of us now within the, like, immediate YouTube production team. And so it was like getting to know, like, that, maybe that's a conversation for another time, but it was getting to know new characters. It was understanding, you know, it was kind of a bit of, I will say it was a bit of like us versus them for like the first couple of months, because myself and the other boys, we were like, well, we've been doing this, you know, for a year. Like, we know how this works. Like, it was a bit of a struggle to, I guess, mesh as a team. And then suddenly we got things working. It was really great. Like, everyone who I met within that team, I still speak to now, and they're really great, great people. And yeah, we just, it was just like heavy, lots of grafting, lots of work, lots of putting in the hours, staying late.
Things sound like they were improving in life though as well. It sounds like, your financial situation changed then as well?
Yeah, so when I moved to YouTube, my salary increased, not massively, I will admit, but it did increase, yes. I was within the 20s range. And then something happened, and basically I wasn't working within DreamTech anymore. I was working for another company. And so my salary changed then when we got transferred to another company. And then, so I was a production coordinator at the space, and the majority of my job was just talking to people, booking in shoots, booking events, working with Audrey, who was the events coordinator there, working with the team to basically build sets, working with entertainment partnerships. So let's say Adidas came in, or music partnerships, if, you know, Dua Lipa wanted to come in, or, you know, we worked with Linkin Park before Chester passed away. Like, there were just incredible opportunities that, you know, someone who had been at Mackie D's a couple of years ago was just blown away and had to pinch myself every now and then. And yeah, I don't know. I think my life changed drastically by being there, and I became far more outgoing and...
Still pretty quiet.
Yeah. And I'd moved then as well. I'd moved to Camden and had a little place there. And so, yeah, it was a good time. It was a good time.
I think that's almost like a full another episode. I think talking about your YouTube space.
Yeah.
I feel I've known you since YouTube space.
Yeah.
I feel like that's been such a big part of your life.
Yeah, maybe I'll do like YouTube and me, because there's stuff that I'm sat here like.
Why I left the YouTube space, like, yeah, why I left BuzzFeed.
I'm sat here, it's like...
Because I think there's the story of that. There's so much you can get into with, like, yeah, people you've met.
That's the thing. My memory's really bad. And
we've got to write that down the next time.
There's so many people that I've met who I want to shout out, and who I'm, yeah, so thankful to have met.
So at this stage, did you ever think... did you ever look back to your 200-pound days and think... Well, I'm living now in Camden. This is so much better.
Yeah.
Like, did the 200-pound days, like, teach you much to then where you were at this YouTube stage?
Yeah, yeah.
Then for you to figure out what you might have wanted to do in the future?
I think so. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, I still wasn't on that much, but I was making enough, yes, to, like, get by and to do stuff. But, like, my life was YouTube. Like anyone who knows me, like my life between the years of 2016, 17, 18 were pretty much all YouTube and just the people that I met when I was there. And like my life was just changing drastically in a lot of different ways. And I was meeting new people, doing new things, but I was spending, you know, I was spending all my time there. Like there was a gym at Google. Like, so I'd just go in there at the weekends. I was just there a lot and it kind of defined me a lot. And I was tied to the name of YouTube so much. And so
it was like your middle name, Charlie YouTube.
Yeah,
first.
I'm probably Charlie YouTube in a lot of people's phones because I don't know. Again, I don't want to, maybe I'm not, but it was just, I was always a person at the door. If there was an issue going on, I'd be the person that would get pinged to go and sort it out. Like, I remember PewDiePie rocked up, right?
Oh,
no,
really?
Was it PewDiePie? No, yeah, I had to give a tour to PewDiePie and Jacksepticeye.
Wow.
And all that lot.
What about Logan Paul?
Logan Paul came in after I left. So, shame.
There's so many, like, really big players in the YouTube space.
So,
at YouTube space.
Exploring with Josh, right, rocked up with Evan Edinger one day. And obviously, there's a system, right, to get into the space because you don't want to let some crazies come in and try and find YouTubers. So you have to have a certain threshold to get in. So you basically ring the doorbell and the reception team and security team will determine whether you can come in. So a lot of YouTubers would rock up and say, hey, like I've got this channel, like can I come in? And you know, you kind of have to turn them away because you don't really know who they are, but because everything's done on virtual chat, I could be sat upstairs on like level 8 and I could get a message from someone being like, hey, there's someone downstairs, can you just come and check them out and you know see who they are, what's going on? And yeah, it was exploring with Josh and he'd come over from the States and I was like, yeah, I know who you are, like of course, because I like watched YouTube back then.
Yeah,
and I was really ingrained in that. I actually watched the stuff that these people were putting out and I felt like they really appreciated that because some people were just working there and
I had no idea about YouTube at all.
Yeah, didn't really know much about YouTube. And I mean, that's fine, like, you know, some people work at companies and they do their time, they go home because it's not a thing to them. Like maybe they're interested in art, maybe they're interested in music or like cooking. That everyone's got their own individual things that they are interested in, but just mine was nerdy YouTube and watching people and like just being ingrained in that culture. And so yeah, stuff like that. And you remember when it was the Christmas party and Elle Mills came over and I got a message from my friend Tomek and he was like, yo, Elle's over from Canada, like, and she really needs to make this video with Dodie. Can we use the space? Because if you're a filmmaker in London, filming space is prime. It's expensive.
So expensive.
And this was the great thing about the YouTube space, is it was free. You didn't have to pay anything and you can get kit. So that's why it was kind of so popular. And yeah, basically, it's so bad. Again, I kind of hark back that your girl's not the best when it comes to obeying rules, let's say. But I was like, I know that if Dodie Clark and Elle Mills do a video together, it is going to be viral. Like, I know that 100%, hand on heart. Because Elle Mills was blowing up back then. I was watching her. She was making absolutely incredible stuff that was so original, so unique. Side note, Adrian Bliss and all that crew. I forgot to mention them and shout them out earlier, but they were coming in. Big up Adrian Bliss. I only say that because he was involved in this video too. yeah, and we just had the floor done at the new YouTube space. Very expensive new flooring come in. And this was over the Christmas period, right? So we were shut. The space was shut. And I had to go, not to my manager, but to my manager's manager. So I went behind her back and said, hey, so-and-so, can I basically do this production with this creator while the space is shut for Christmas? Because I know it's going to be huge. And I got in a lot of trouble with my direct line manager because of it, because she was like, you know, why are you doing this? Like, you shouldn't just be opening for this person, blah, 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 blah. But I don't know, I was passionate about it. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. And bless Elle, she goes all out in her videos. If you know what she does, she doesn't do anything half-assed. She invests her time and her money into her productions. And she brought in this ginormous eye sculpture, right? So imagine my face knowing that a huge eye sculpture, which is colored too, it's not just clear, it's a colored eye sculpture, is being wheeled across brand new wooden flooring. And I'm like, I'm going to get fired. I'm 100% going to get fired.
And that's why you don't work there anymore.
So basically there's a divider, right, in the space, at this new space. So I put the divider down to try and hide what I was doing. And Elle and, you know, the gang decked everything out in like prom attire. You can, if you search like Elle Dodium, maybe, I don't know. Don't know if it's up there anymore.
I don't think that's up there anymore. But
basically it was a video of Elle inviting Dodie to prom, and it hit over 1 million views. And I was like, yes, minor achievement done. But yeah, I think that's just kind of always been my work ethic. Like, if I believe in something, I'm 100% going to do it, and I'm going to champion it. Even if it means that I have to have awkward conversations with people, even if it means that, you know, maybe I was wrong, and I will admit that in the end. I'll always admit when I've done something wrong and when I'm sorry for something. But if I believe in it and I think that it's going to change things or change something in a certain way for somebody out there, then I will always do it. And yeah, I think it just reached a point where I was very much creator, creator, creator. I always am like championing creators. And it reached a point where YouTube was very much going brands, brands, brands. And I was like, I'm clashing here. I don't think I can, I don't want to get into too much of the politics, but I just felt that.
We'll get into that in another episode, guys.
Maybe for another time. I don't have any bad blood. Like, I absolutely love everyone who works there. There's a lot of people who still work there to this day, but I reached a point where I wasn't growing anymore. I didn't feel like what I could bring to the space was good for me, because I was spending too much time there, and it was becoming comfortable for me. It was becoming easy, because I could go in there every day and I could do my job with my hands tied behind my back, because I lived and breathed it for a long, long time.
So what next?
So I left in June, May or June of 2018, and I went to the BBC, and I got
the British Broadcasting Centre.
Yeah. So there's two elements of the BBC. There's the BBC Digital Studios, and then there's BBC, like official BBC, like BBC One, BBC Two, like the traditional side of things. And there's digital, which is where you can get funding externally. So that's why you see BBC shows on Netflix and things like that, because the digital side can sell to these outlets, and that's how they get money. And then Digital Studios makes their own content as well. But like, let's say the Natural History Unit, that's like an official BBC, BBC, you know, the David Attenborough's and stuff like that. So I joined, like, luckily I got recommended a job by a friend, John. He basically, someone called Christopher Allen, who again is a friend of mine, big shout outs to Chris. He posted a job because the team were looking for a production manager, and it was only for a maternity cover. So I was like, yeah, why not? Like, the BBC is something, it's, you know, it's like a legacy, right? If you're British, you know exactly what the BBC, or if you're anyone in the world, I'd like to think that you know what the BBC is. It's an incredible platform. It's created some amazing shows over the years, and it's like a kind of British staple. And I was like, to work for the BBC would be amazing. Like, yeah, let's give it a go. And yeah, there was a lot of change going on in my life at that specific time, and it just felt right. So I made the jump.
Were you there long?
I was there for, well, I was there, and I remember starting, and I felt very lost, because I'd kind of gone from somewhere where it was my dream job, let's say, and then I'd left that, I'd left my friends, and I'd gone somewhere which was completely new. I was, you know, it's like starting school all over again, trying to make friends, trying to, you know, I had someone to manage, and I'd never managed anyone really before. And it was, yeah, it was interesting because it was a different way of working. And the BB, like, I'd gone from somewhere which was very fast paced, it was very quick, like Google, YouTube, you know, these modern companies that do have a bit of a reputation of being, you know, like the chill casual sofas. You can go and get a Coke from the fridge, you can, you know, there's sweets everywhere. It's a very laid back kind of approach to working. However, you do end up working longer hours. It's strange because I remember at the BBC, people used to go at 5 and I was like, what is this? Why are you leaving? It's only 5. And like, that was so surreal to me. Like, I'd never ever left before 6:30 at a job up until then. It was so mind blowing to me that if I was like, if you work in production, you work late. Like, that's just the thing, you know, it's not corporate. It's not 9 to 5. Like, production is a lot of the times, you know, you're working this. What time is it now? It's like 1 a.m. for us. Like,
yeah,
I'm so used to working late and being up late just because of the nature of what this job is, right? If someone wants something, you're shooting next day at 9 a.m. and you know, someone's like, which I've been in this position before, I need this
set
lens
before.
I need this. Yeah, I need this. I need to drop off kit at this time. So I need to go to this location to make sure that the doors are open so they can physically get this kit in. So yeah, I was just a bit, it was a bit of a culture shock for me at the BBC. And it took me, I remember my friend Jeff Marshall, shout out to Jeff. He had worked at the BBC before and he was like, look, give it 6 months. Every job, when you start it, you need to give it at least 6 months just to see if it's, you know, it might not be for you right now, but give it time. Like, things will happen. You'll make friends, you'll meet people. And yeah, so I kind of kept going. And then a role came up as a producer there and I went for it, but I didn't get it. And then basically another job came up and I was interviewing for it. And I got round to the second stage of interviews. And then I basically got a call from someone called Hannah, who at the time worked at DreamTech. And she was like, listen, a role's come up at this company where I currently work. And pretty much the job is yours if you want it. Like, we'd love to have you back. And we've got this contract with this company and we'd love to place you there. And so I was like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And I remember feeling, I was so anxious at that time. Like, by then I'd moved to Putney. I was living with my sister and her boyfriend. And again, like, conversation for another day, but other personal things were going on. And I was super anxious. I was very mentally drained because I didn't want to let my team and my friends and colleagues at the BBC down, because I was like, this is a really good opportunity. But at the same time, I did felt limited at the BBC a little bit. And I felt like, you know, there's a saying at the BBC that you're there for years. There's a lot of people who are there for a long, long time. And they're very much ingrained in the BBC way of life. And that's great. Like, that's great. Good for them. But I just don't think the brands that I was working on were that inspiring to me personally. Like, it was Top Gear. It was you know, kids stuff, all which served a purpose and had a place. But like BBC Earth, I got to work on stuff with BBC Earth and the team there who run the digital side of things, Ellie and Cara, like, yeah, they're amazing. Like, they're great, great people. And yeah, it was a real shame to leave. And, but yeah, basically I had to have that chat with my boss. I had to have that chat, you know, she was the one who was interviewing me for this role. And I had to turn around and tell her, actually, I don't want this job.
At the interview?
So I basically had done my second interview and I was waiting. I was in the waiting stage.
Yeah.
But then this call came through. I remember literally this call came through just after I had my second interview. And I was like, maybe this, like, I'm not a massive believer in like fate and coincidence and all that, but it felt like it was like, okay, this is a call for something which could be bigger than what I'm doing right now. And so I made that decision, and I left in May of last year. So yeah, again, it's now June, but I've been there for just over a year.
Mm.
And I remember leaving the BBC, and I remember walking out those doors, and I was like, I kind of breathed a bit of a sigh of relief in a way, because I don't think I was there was a lot of stuff going on then, but I felt like it was the right thing to do for me at that time. And would I like to go back to the BBC? Like, yeah, maybe, for sure. I've always, like, Radio 1, stuff like that would be super cool to work on.
I guess it's different though, because BBC is probably more, slightly more traditional media.
Yeah.
Rather than what we know what media is right now in terms of like everything upcoming, being online, being on your phone.
This is the thing. I kind of joined, and they hadn't really worked with YouTubers before. And I was like, look, these people are hitting millions and millions of eyes like every single day. You need to get on this. Like, we need to be doing more digital first stuff. And like, the people that you need to be working with need to be like diverse, incredible people. And they are out there, and you just need to.
But that's, I guess that's coming from your YouTube background and like getting a flavor of that sphere.
Yeah. So remember, we like worked with Jay Foreman. We worked with Ben Hunt. We worked with Lana Summer. It was good. And I'd like to think that I kind of planted a little bit of a seed of like, here you go. Right, now go with it.
But in every place that you've worked, so obviously the company you work for at the minute, are you doing very similar like type of job that you would have done in all these other places?
Similar to, it's more similar to YouTube for sure. I work, there's a studio basically, and I work within the studio, and people internally come in and people externally come in. So let's say I'm an agency. I work at an agency within a company. And yeah, basically I'm filming, I'm behind the camera. So unlike YouTube, where I couldn't actually film people, I could only give them, it's kind of like dry hire, right? Where you go and pick up kit and then you go. I'm now doing everything. So I'm pre-producing things. I'm producing them, I'm shooting them, and in some cases I'm editing them. So we have a team of six producers, four editors, one studio manager, and then we have like a service owner. So basically all of us are given an allocated projects, and then we're all allocated different roles within that project. So let's say I'm working for my friend Adele. She's got a production on, and then I'm her camera op, or I'm her floor manager. Mm-hmm. So basically like we're all allocated roles. And yeah, I think I started there, and they have three main offices, but two studio spaces. So you kind of fleet between Tottenham Court Road and Euston. I'm predominantly based in Euston. And we basically get allocated things. And to be honest, since like the lockdown, I have been insanely busy with work, because we've had to pivot a lot of what we typically do in the studio to now kind of consulting people, to educating people, teaching. Like, I'm doing a webinar tomorrow. It's a lot of now training people to make content. So coming out of lockdown, let's see how busy the studio is. I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, like being now at this company, I've managed to get more hands-on with different platforms and different like live streaming equipment and all that type of stuff. And yeah, it's way more me, let's say, working at companies that are more fast-paced. And there's a lot of different people within this company, right? There's a lot of people within the entertainment sphere. There's a lot of people within the sports, the news sphere. So like, I got to go to Nigeria with some people earlier in 2020, so around February. I got to go and like teach a workshop. Like, I'd never been to Africa before in my life, you know? it was a bit mind-blowing to me of all these opportunities that were kind of coming up. And so I think only being at this company can I really say I fully know what a producer does, how they work, and what it takes to, like, if you've got an idea, you've like got that spark to then how to see it through to like the very end. in like post-production and final delivery.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you think there's anything throughout your whole career and all the experiences that you've experienced, is there anything that is like, this needed to happen for me to get to where I am right now? I feel like the bike thing is like, that's probably one of my things that stuck out the most, that because you didn't have a lot of money, the only way would have been to get two bikes for less than 30 minutes. And then that would have been the same on the way home, right?
Yeah. We're cycling like 10K a day. I don't know. I think it's just, I was just super determined, I think, because I hadn't come from a background where, you know, I know everything about how a camera works. I know everything about settings. I know how to, you know, build something. Like, I was having to kind of learn and train myself. And yeah, I'm not the most technological person, but in terms of like produce, I think I'm a good people person, right? I think that's what I really found comfort in. I found myself in situations where I can help someone. And I really enjoy that. And again, I don't really know where I'm kind of going to go post this. Again, I've kind of said in a YouTube video I put out today, like, I think the best thing you can do as a career is to work for yourself. Like, my dad always taught me that, like, work for yourself, because then you don't have anyone else to answer to. And like, you know, you've seen me in the flat. Like, if you work for other people, you're going to moan about stuff, because there's stuff that you're not going to agree with. And there's stuff that I can't change being within a company because of just the way that it is. Like, you don't make the rules, so you have to do as you're told, pretty much. Whereas if you work for yourself, you make the rules and you make those choices. Your choices aren't forced, not forced, but
yet you still moan about it.
Yeah.
I actually don't think there's any person that just doesn't moan about stuff. Like, we all
yeah,
even it's just in human beings.
Yeah, let's say you live on
it's raining, oh it's too hot, oh it's too cold.
Yeah if you're in LA, let's say, and it's like sunny every single day, maybe you just like, I'm sick of sunny weather. No one's ever said like sick of sunny weather, but like,
yeah, but some people are.
Yeah, I don't think you can ever be have like a perfect life, because it doesn't work like that. You've got to go through different stages. You've got to go through hard times. Like, I used to miss trains, right? Or the commute that I used to do was 2 hours each way. So I used to walk from my parents' home to the train station, 15 minutes. Sometimes I'd miss the train and have to wait for the next one. Then they're not like 5 minutes. They're like every half an hour, an hour. And then I take an hour and a half train to get into London Bridge. And then I'd walk 20 minutes from London Bridge to Liverpool Street. And then I'd work 9 a.m. to like 7 p.m., 8 p.m. Like, my parents never used to see me during the week, because I would come home. Sometimes I'd just purposely stay late, because I just chose to like get the last train home, because I was like, you know what? I don't want to sit on a train with like sweaty like people. I just want to like, you know, do my job. And I love London as well. I hated waving kind of goodbye to London every day was just really upsetting for me. But I don't know. I think all those hours that you put in, like, yes, they are tough at the time. And yes, things happen that make you frustrated. But like, each part of those hurdles makes you a better person the next day, because you've jumped over it. You've made it. You've done the thing that was hard. You had that conversation with that person. Your boss has said, we haven't got money to pay. We haven't like got the budget to pay for this person. So you have to go back and call them and explain that, you know, as I'm sure you've been on that other end of the phone. Like, it's having difficult conversations. And
mine was the worst.
What do you mean?
It's a story. I had a job and I got accepted for the job. Then the budget got cut.
Oh.
But at this point, I already bought a new lens.
Oh, no.
It cost like $2,000, this new lens, because I thought the budget would have covered it.
I didn't
do the job in the end.
Budgets are another thing we should talk about. But yeah, I don't know. There's not anything defining, I'd say. I mean, there's just lots of little defining things.
Yeah.
I think.
Let's touch upon this YouTube channel that you're talking about. I'm not sure how many people know, but you used to have a YouTube channel that you did mention that you uploaded it videos onto.
Yeah.
Then I guess it sounds like you stopped.
Yeah.
And then now you're doing it again.
Yeah. So I broke my leg when I was at university. No, when I was at home, before I went back to university, I broke my leg and I was really bored at home. So I made a YouTube video. And like that's kind of like my first.
And then go to the now.
And going to the now. So all of those videos are kind of private because this is something that I made like, 10 years ago. And then I've always wanted to get back onto the platform, like always. But for some reason, I just never did it. I have no excuse. I had the time and I didn't have the right headspace, I think, to do it. But I've been obviously surrounded by people. Like the majority of my friends in London are all creatives now. And, you know, I'm just surrounded by people doing stuff. And I think it was difficult for me because, you know, when you're surrounding yourself by people making things, coming in every single day, making things, creating things, putting stuff out there, being, you know, surrounding yourself with amazing individuals who are just putting loads of great content out into the world, you end up internalizing that and being like, you're doing nothing. Like, you're not doing anything for anyone. And a lot of people would just be like, you know, what do you do? Like, what is your actual job? Because people would come into YouTube and have a chat with me and I'd help them make stuff. But like, no one really knew what I do. Like, even now, people are like, so what's your actual job? Like, because a producer's job is basically just to make things happen.
I think a lot of YouTubers don't actually know what producer is because even when they make videos at home, on a smaller scale, they do produce it themselves. But when you actually go onto a set with not just one person, if it's like four or five cameramen, an actual studio space, a location, and you maybe need to get lunch at the location or the location needs to be scouted, that's all done by a producer. I don't think creators, so like, especially YouTube and Instagram people or any kind of online platform, I don't think they really realize, like actually for me, I didn't properly realize how essential a producer role is to a big shoot with a bigger team. And I think if you say to like a YouTuber, even with like a million subs, ask them what a producer does, they probably don't be like, producer, is that even a role?
I guess the bigger creators out there, I mean, all right, let's take people like Sammy Paul and, you know, people who are making visual films and like putting stuff out there. Like, there's that whole side of UK YouTube that I used to watch that really invested money and, you know, invested in people. There are a lot of people that I knew who worked on like Bertie Gilbert films, who were, you know, they had directors, they had sound ops, they had cinematographers. And those people kind of rose up within the YouTube community. And, you know, they were the first types of people who I was like, okay, like this is kind of like a mini film. Because yeah, you look at like grand Hollywood movies and you always see like, oh, produced by so-and-so. You never really look at the credits at the end. You're just like, you watch a film, oh, that was good, that was a good film. But you don't really, unless you work within this industry, you have no idea how much time, effort, little things. Like, imagine being a person on set and you're like, oh, but the actress's dress doesn't fit. And it's like, if you don't get this dress fixed in the next, like, you know, hour, then the entire day's set is wait. Like, just a producer's job is kind of,
just making sure everything runs smooth.
Yeah, to fix everything. To be that, every production, big production, needs a captain and needs someone at the helm of it. And yes, you might not be the creative vision behind it. You might not be the director calling the shots, but you're the person kind of ticking things on in the background.
Mm.
You're not really a big voice on set, but you're the person who people go to understand, like, where is the sound op for today? Where, you know, where's so-and-so? Where's the dressing room? Where do I go to get this? You know, you're the person that the cinematographer calls when they're running late and they've just come off the tube. Like, little things, but all little things that piece together to make the puzzle connect.
So, like Birdie Gilbert, Sammy Paul, did they help you want to start a channel then? Like restart your channel?
No, I think I've had ideas for making stuff for ages. I mean, we've been traveling and like I've been filming stuff. I've been going through my hard drive, as I'm sure every creative has been during lockdown, and like going back over footage and checking things out and being like, oh yeah, like yeah, I've filmed so much stuff, but I just haven't put it anywhere. And I think the thing that I was coming back to was like I was surrounding myself by creatives, but just I didn't know what to do because I felt like, well, my voice is just going to be another voice in the ether. You know, who am I to tell anyone anything? Like, what's my kind of story? What's my different approach? Like, I'm someone who's worked within the platform itself. And so I put a lot of pressure on myself because I was like, I am kind of coming from this background and kind of coming from it from a sense of I want to practice what I preach and I want to be like true to me and I want to be unique and I want to be different and I want to, yeah, I just don't want to like make stuff for the sake of it. And have we run out of battery? Sorry, you I'm trying to get what you showed me.
The time.
Is it super late? Is it like, how long have we been going?
1:18.
Okay, oh wow. If you're still with us at 1:18, then hats off to you. But yeah, I think I just reached a point where I was like, I'm going to start creating for me now because I want to do it for me. I don't really want to do it for anyone else. And I'm not asking for anyone else's approval. I just want something. And I think after seeing what you've been making, it's a great way to have your, you know, your history of your, like your growth. And yeah, I kind of do feel like I have lived through it. So I just don't want to make stuff for the sake of it. I want to make stuff with intentionality and purpose.
It's actually so strange now watching videos in our flat where you're making videos because it's always just been me.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I don't know, like
it's cool, but it's just like, oh, here's another
yeah but hey, let's see, like
go subscribe if you haven't subscribed already. how did they find you?
The thing is, how do we
find you online?
If you just type in Charlie Firth, it should pop up. I don't know if I'm the first one in the search. It's really weird because when you type in Charlie Firth on YouTube, it comes up with like a baby thing. And I don't know if it's because of the whole Charlie bit my finger. Charlie's on YouTube, honestly. They got Charlie the Unicorn.
Charlie.
Like, I'm surrounded by...
Charlie bit my finger. That's hilarious.
Yeah. This, my cursed name. But yeah, just, I guess, go subscribe. It'd be really cool if you do. I would love to hit 1,000 subs by the end of the year. That's my little goal. So let's see. Let's see what happens. And yeah, I think I've just been inspired a lot lately by the people that have been watching, like Matt Diavela's, Craig Adams, Johnny Harris, Iz Harris. Like, I'm a sucker for American content creators. Like, I love the UK scene, but for me, the stuff that these guys have been making, you know, we've been Casey Neistat fans for a very, very long time. And fair enough, he's not making as much stuff as he used to, but
he's inspired so many people though.
Yeah. I think he was like the godfather of YouTube in a sense. And everyone kind of looks up to him when they start, not because, you know, they want to make stuff similar to him. It's just, he's such a big source of inspiration. And, you know, I wouldn't have found Sarah Dietschy had it not been for,
well,
for him. And
this is a very good segue.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're going to do a quick fire round.
Oh, God. See, this is where I'm going to suck as well because I have no...
The good segue is...
Yeah.
First question.
Yeah.
Favorite YouTuber?
Oh, need to ask me that.
Let's go actually two ways. Favorite male and a favorite female.
Okay. All right. For a very long time, my favorite female was Community Channel, Natalie Tran. She's an Australian. She is absolutely hilarious. I think I'm still going to stick with her.
Okay.
Because... I don't think she makes content now, but she's absolutely brilliant. And favorite male YouTuber, I mean, it's got to be Matt Diavela because he's changed my life.
You just said Casey Neistat.
No, I think Matt has had a profound impact on my life.
Old school camera or modern DSLR?
Modern DSLR.
One place that you'd like to be right now, and obviously our flat is the best place you could be right now, but if you had to just
teleport to somewhere around the world, where would you want to be?
I think somewhere with mountains and a lake. Somewhere in between, like the Italian Alps, some tiny little cottage in the hills.
Okay.
Peace and quiet.
Plane or yacht?
I love travel. I've been on a lot of planes in my life. I've had a lot of anxiety to do with planes recently, but being stuck on a yacht doesn't really... I think a plane, because then there's a destination at the end of it.
Fair. Train or car?
Train.
Donuts or cake?
Oh, are you asking me this because of my the giant birthday cake that sat in our fridge? I got sent a giant, giant birthday cake that's sat, bigger than my sitting. Head. It's like we've got half the cake left. Oh, tricky. I don't know. I love donuts. I'll say cake because I do love cake. Banana bread.
Right, here's the last one. Would you rather eat chocolate every day or sweets every day as your only source of food?
That's such a random question. All right, if I had to, chocolate, hands down, chocolate.
Every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah, bring it on. Chocolate, no all the sweet. Way. Even though I can't have dairy milk because I'm hashtag vegan. So it would have to be that.
Okay.
Some sweet vegan chocolate, I think. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, that was an informative chat.
Yeah. I mean, there's stuff that we can go off probably in, like you said, I think there's a lot of things we can delve a bit deeper in. And, you know, this is us just kind of sat on our sofas, by the way. Like, I've got no notes on me. And maybe this is something for future episodes that I'll start to, like, have a bit more of a, you know, I know Craig Adams, like, writes down bullet points of things he wants to cover. And maybe going forward, we should do this. But I think this is just a little insight. It's like an hour and a half, right? Super sorry. This is a really long, elongated
this
chat.
Is the longest they'll ever be.
Yeah.
What did you say at the start? I'm not very good talking about myself. 90 minutes later.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. If you've listened this far, you're incredible.
Yeah. And if you have enjoyed the Pascal podcast, please head over to Apple or Spotify. Those are kind of the two main places that we have our podcast on. I'm sure you probably listen to this on a lot of different places, but if you could go subscribe there. And if you have some free time, it would be great if you go onto Apple Podcasts, give us a review, if it's a rating or a small comment, just to let us know what you think of the podcast. If you do have any questions about what's been spoken about today, and if there's any topics at all that we've been speaking about in the past couple of podcasts that you would like us to expand upon, then now is the perfect time. If you head over to our Instagram account, you can direct message us there and we'll do our best to reply to you. And if we don't, we've definitely seen the message, so don't worry about that. Or alternatively, you can head out to our website, www.timelinepodcast.co.uk, and email us through there. And you can find both of us on our own social media channels through our website as well. And yeah, well, I'm super excited to delve into future episodes now. I feel like we've had the groundwork done to talk about our foundations and kind of our small edit of our timeline. And the future is bright.
What's next? What should we talk about next?
That we will decide soon.
keep updated on Instagram. We'll put out a post on what we're going to be talking about next. But yeah, thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Charlie.
And yeah, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
Bye.